You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 251 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Hands On Gloves, the all-in-one grooming, bathing gloves. Horsemanship Radio is part of the family of the Horse Radio Network. And today we have one of those iconic interviews. Monty is really going to interview Simon Stokes, who is, he's practically part of the family now, but he's one of the winningest jump jockeys that we've ever been around, and also one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to the Horsemanship Radio. Thanks for joining us. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 1st and the 15th of the month. Isn't that right, Jen?
Like clockwork.
Like clockwork. You are the reason for the clockwork, too. You keep us in line. And, you know, unlike a lot of laissez-faire podcasters, you are very professional.
Yes, we insist on a schedule here at Horse Radio Network, and you've been keeping up that schedule for how many years now?
Oh my gosh, Jen, 10 years.
Has it been 10?
It's been 10 years.
It has, because right here I see on our notes, 2014.
Well, the very first episode was in 2013, but I'll count it as we were rolling in 2014 for sure. So yeah.
I think 2013, we only had a couple episodes. We didn't, it wasn't a whole year yet.
I think that was it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. I think that's where I was trying to decide if Glenn really talked me into this or not, you know.
Yes. And aren't we glad he did?
Well, we've had a lot of fun. We will have a lot of fun too, because I think we're just getting better. What do you think?
I do. And you've had some really, really fascinating interviews. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Already in 2024, and we're only in March.
Yeah,
just kicking up the guests here. Just kicking.
You know, I just take a note from you and Jamie Jennings and Glenn, who just say, if you want to learn about something, go ask the best person, the most interesting person you can, and then just have a conversation. And I think that's what we do here on Horsemanship Radio. I learn a lot from the Dr. Juliet Geddes on nutrition, and just Dr. Siemens on eyes, and Monty Roberts on equine behavior and training, and all his friends, which is what we're doing today too. We're working with Simon Stokes today.
You recorded this interview all by your lonesome because you are a grown-up professional podcaster now, and you didn't bring me along.
No, I should have. You'd have fun.
I can't wait to hear it. I'm fascinated to hear about anytime Monty gets to sit down and chat with his racing connections. I can gain so much from that because I'm outside the racing community, and it gives me such interesting insight. So I can't wait to hear that. And we're going to get right to that interview after we hear from our title sponsor. Hello, we couldn't be here without them. Hands On Gloves.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts. And am I excited to bring you the news of a revolutionary new all-in-one shedding, bathing, grooming tool. Hands-On Gloves. They are fantastic. And you believe me, I've tried them all. Hands-On outperforms traditional curry combs, shedding blades, metal bristles, and all those things. Most animals will gravitate to you for more grooming and petting time. If you wear them, your animals will love you more for it. While using the Hands-On Gloves, you can easily handle water hoses, shampoo bottles, lead ropes, leashes, and anything you want with them on your hands. They are easy to clean, and they massage muscles and stimulate circulation while helping to distribute natural oils for a healthy skin and coat. Hands-On is changing the way we bathe, de-shed, and groom our animals forever. Hands-On Gloves. They are fantastic.
I'm privileged to sit down today with Monty Roberts, Simon Stokes, longtime friends. I'm going to introduce you as friends, but really the gist of this is about the amazing amount of horsemanship that you have between the two of you. I've been fortunate enough to follow the story, but I want all our listeners to hear this story and keep this for the history records, because I don't know if what they've created will ever be recreated again with such record-breaking statistics. But right now, it's just two friends talking. And I'll start with you, Dad, Monty. How did you meet Simon Stokes anyway?
Well, first of all, it's the most pleasurable possible conversation I could have, because recently I wrote down the names that were the most important to my career in terms of how they elevated me by meeting me and helping me. And Simon Stokes only had one horse ahead of him, Lomitas. And, you know, he's been absolutely the single most major help to me in kicking up my concepts to the world. There he is in Germany. And he's a steeplechase jockey. But he works all week in the morning for Andreas Wuhler, a trainer in Bremen, Germany. And so they had a horse. And this horse went through some terrible things. We're not sure all the things he went through, but he turned up full of poison and had to be escaping Germany, in which we decided, Simon and the Jacobs family decided, that he had to go to England so he could go to America, because they were hiring me to help with the starting of babies. And I had already been 6 months or something connected with them. And here was their major horse, Lomitas, two-year-old champion of the year before I came on the scene. He had all the talent in the world. And they took him off to race him at three, and oh my word, he was in terrible shape. And there were things about the whole thing that looked like somebody was out to get a lot of money from the Jacobs family that had a lot of money. And so Simon Stokes got on a plane with Lomitas and went to England to the stable of Lester Piggott, number one jockey in England. And they changed his name. It was a nickname, Pirelli. And Simon Stokes had ridden a horse that had kind of a name like that, and then his nickname was Pirelli. So they used Pirelli so that people wouldn't find him. And then I went over there and met with Simon and the people that had him there, and we arranged to bring him to California. And we did bring him to California, but the poison that he had taken on was too much, and his tendons and ligaments started to go wrong on him, and he was x-raying badly. And we had him at Hollywood Park training there, and Santa Anita he raced and won the only race we put him in. But I think Simon and I looked at one another and said, that's all he can take, that's enough, we'll retire him and send him back to Germany to be a stallion. Because he was well-bred, but he was also a champion, remember. And I think Simon agreed that he should be retired. Didn't you?
Oh, definitely, Monty. He had nothing else to prove. He'd done it. He was a champion racehorse in Germany, mm-hmm. as two-year-old and three-year-old. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing was, you know, this crime that was going on, for him being so famous, the Jacobs family getting this threatening letter that they would kill him if a certain amount of money wasn't paid over. That was the threat that everyone was worried about. And that I got a phone call one day asking if I would travel with Lomitas to another country, without telling me where first.
Oh, really?
Just asking if I would do it for an unlimited time. They didn't know how long I'd be with him, just to get him into safety. So obviously, I wasn't allowed to tell any friends or my girlfriend, because you don't know how involved she is or her side of the friendships, if there's someone else on the bad side with inside information. So it was a pretty exciting thing, but I had to decide pretty quick if I'll do it or not. And obviously I said yes, because Lomitas was my best friend.
Right.
And I was picked up shortly, a couple of days later, with a chauffeur from Mr. Walter Jacobs.
Did you talk to Walter Jacobs about this? I mean, how do you know it was the right guy who was hiring you, right?
Yeah, he spoke to me.
Okay. All right. And it reads like a scary movie. So they literally mailed a letter to Walter?
They mailed a letter. And there was also a meeting with the criminal for a payoff. The money was there, with police, obviously, and special agents. But the person who was threatening didn't turn up for the money give over. So Mr. Jacobs said it's time, he's going to get this horse in safety, which they did.
That's lovely. Yeah.
And
so what was your part in that? So how did you put that together?
Well, my part of it was just to travel with him and be with him as a partner, mm-hmm. because I was his daily rider. And obviously through being with Monty, I knew how to handle him if he doesn't want to load in the plane or doesn't want to load in the horse box and so on and so forth, his other problems. So they picked me up with a chauffeur and drove me to the horse where he was standing. I had no idea he was standing there, but that was where he was. And we drove then to, with a horse box, to the airport with police escort to the airport. And then I loaded him in the plane, and that was quite an experience, because him obviously being a difficult horse to load before we met Monty.
This was his issue, right?
This was it. And I led him on the plane runway to go up into the plane, a ramp into the plane, thinking, oh my goodness, is this going to work out? But he was a lamb. He was a lamb and did everything I wanted him to. And he stood in there, and it was a very low plane because it was like a jet plane. So it was an open box in the plane. So if he'd have smashed his head up, he'd have gone through the roof. So I was pretty worried about that. Mm-hmm. But he traveled brilliant when we flew over and got to England. But the people at the plane were not allowed to know who is called. I had to keep the paperwork on me. And nobody was allowed to read it to know who this horse was. And so then I named him Pirelli, just to give him a name, for when he landed in England as well. So nobody knew that Lomitas had been shipped out to another country.
Mm-hmm. That's how valuable this horse was, just to put it in perspective.
It should be known that it was 6-8 months before all of this that I was called in 1991 to fix this thing about the starting stalls and the trucks that he wouldn't go on and stuff. And I think his trainer at the time, Andreas Wuhler, I think he thought it was silly to try to get all this stuff done because he was bad.
Yeah.
Everybody just kind of wrote him off, you know, that
really?
He was bad. Not Simon so much. I think Simon loved him from the first day. But there were some ladies there, and his lady groom loved him, you know.
What was her name?
Martina.
Martina.
Yeah. And so I started to work with him on the first day that I met him. I got, you know, my rope on him, and I'm talking to him, and I'm leading him around, just trying to get to know him, yeah? And I went to a little trotting track there where we were kind of inside. And, oh, boy, I mean, he said, I'm not going here, I'm not going there. And he really had a disposition that was tough to get in front of. And I don't know what caused all that. Maybe it was just genetic. I don't know. But I tell you, he did some things that were just absolutely off the charts with his ability, his ability to move, his
athleticism. I see.
But his brain power too.
Okay.
And I remember standing there, and I don't talk to myself.
No.
I don't talk to myself.
As a rule.
And I was the only one there with him, human with him. Mm-hmm. Simon was out on a horse in the set of horses going to the track, and we ordered up a truck to come and take him where I could get a round pin where I could do join-up with him.
We didn't have a round pin, right?
No, we didn't have a round pin there. And I stood there, and I was looking at him, and all of a sudden I'm talking out loud. And I thought, what am I doing talking out loud? But I said, Monty Roberts, you are in the presence of greatness, and you better get your work right with this one, because you either have a champion or you have a killer. Mm-hmm. And I said, why am I saying those things? And the truck pulled in. Mm. And then I went out there and I used my little techniques with my certain way of twisting a rope on his neck and stuff. And I loaded him on the truck.
Yeah.
And here comes the trainer, and Simon's riding in the set of horses.
Yeah.
And the trainer says, oh, you can't put him on the truck. And he was already on the truck. And I said, no, I'm going to take him off, and then we're going to load him and go to it. No, don't take him off. You'll never get him back on again. Remember that?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I also said, don't take him off the truck. Mm-hmm. You got him on there now, so leave him on there. Why'd you take him out again?
It's a great conversation we're having between Simon Stokes and Monty Roberts. So much history. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, Debbie. I just had to write and tell you how much I'm enjoying Monty's podcast on Horsemanship Radio. You and Monty and your podcast guests are my company every evening while I'm feeding, cleaning, and finishing up barn chores for the day. I especially enjoyed the recent podcast 158 because so many of the guys that Monty talked about, and especially Greg Ward, were heroes of mine when I was growing up. It was really fun to be a fly on the wall listening to Monty recount all those stories. And I also enjoyed his discussion with Tanya Johnston about the deer and sigmotaxis. Thanks for all the great information you and your dad are spreading throughout the world. And thanks for making the time doing my barn chores, no chore at all. All the best, Nan Meek.
So do you remember the first moment that you met Monty? Let's go back to that moment.
Yes, I actually picked you up at the airport, not knowing who I was picking up.
Oh, again, they keep secrets from you.
Well, we didn't know Monty Roberts. It was right. A name that was thrown at us, Monty Roberts from America.
He'd been
in England.
Yeah.
So I think I even had a little name shield for you. I'm not sure.
You really had to hold this sign up.
I'm sort of thinking if I don't find him, I'll have this.
But I remember this little guy standing way in the back, very quietly trying to look everybody
that sounds
over.
Right.
But
sounds
Monty
right.
dressed up as he was those days.
Yeah.
Pretty American style. And, you know, it wasn't hard to find Monty in Germany between others.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Do you remember the first time that he began to work with a horse? Anything unique about that moment?
Well, the first moments, Monty was on his own, actually. He went out on his own and did his thing.
Was working with
and came
Mises.
Back with a very calm, well-educated young horse next to him. They seemed to, you know, they bonded straight away. So
this is Lomitas.
This is Lomitas. Mm-hmm. So I was very shortly after that, once we... did the loading, unloading, loading, unloading, which we found out works.
Worked pretty well.
I then drove to Monty to another place in with a riding arena, and we made a round pen out of show jumps with poles and so on. So we had a circle. Okay. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, I hope he doesn't go through the poles or jump out, because what we're going to do here? Right. I had no idea what we're going to do. Join up was just a word for me without any meaning. So watching this happen was very amazing. I'm thinking, my God, I'm seeing this, but no one else has seen it. Mm. So I'll have to tell them about this one. You know, there's some new tricks.
Dinner
here.
Topic.
Yeah,
dinner
yeah. Topic. So it was very impressive to watch.
Yeah. Do you remember when you did your first join up?
When I did my, I was always a little bit embarrassed or shy, you know, not wanting to do one in front of Monty because Monty's the master.
Yeah.
And then try and do the same as Monty. But obviously I tried on my own when Monty wasn't there. But that was later on when I started working for Gestüt Verhof, not in the time where I was working with Lomitas, because I didn't have the facilities to do that, or we didn't have them there. But I was, Monty was teaching me how to get a horse confidence with this coming up and follow up and so on with a head collar. I obviously tried that and worked it. And Andreas, the trainer, was really good to me because if it hadn't been for him giving me the time, and that's what you need, time with a horse and the chance to do it without having to do my other chores as well, I probably would never have learned it. So I'd like to pay a lot of credit to Andreas for that because he gave me the chance to grab the chance.
That's, are you listening, trainers who do run a barn? And a lot of thoroughbred barns are run pretty darn efficiently, meaning numbers, get them out, get them out, get them back in. So you're giving a lot of credit to go against the norm.
Yeah, well, very much so, because Andreas, he never put me under pressure and gave me chance to also to work with other horses. And, you know, we were...
Not just riding.
Not just riding, but he was helping me, and I was then able to help him, and we were helping each other, but a lot of credit to Andreas that he gave me this chance and freedom to do it.
I think a very interesting part of all of this is that early on, when we were getting ready to go up to Hamburg for his race, I said to Simon, I wish I had a little piece of rope about the size of your little finger. I'd like to make a halter for him out of this rope. And he said, well, right across the street here, there's a place, a store for farm and ranch, I don't know, animal products and stuff. And I went over there, and there was the perfect rope there, but it was red.
Okay.
But I didn't care what color it was. I'm colorblind anyway. So I bought this piece of red rope, went back to my hotel, and started, I know how to splice and all of that, so I started splicing this to make a halter. I got there the next day, and Simon was curious to see what the heck am I doing. And we had a starting stall built there that was already there when I came that I was putting him in. And he said, my word, this thing works, you know. And then people started saying, oh, what is this funny cowboy coming from California and wrapping a rope around his head? And I heard some funny thing. They coming with it from the newspapers and doing a little interview because it was, he was a famous horse. We got up to Hamburg and he went, I said, Simon, you go ahead and load him in the gate. And Simon put him in with this thing. And the primary writer for a newspaper was sitting with the announcer up in the stand at Hamburg. And he wrote an article about it the next day. And it came out all over Germany. This guy from California did an amazing thing. It's a miracle. This horse went right in the stall. But I can tell you that I noticed that that rope he had around his head was soaked in blood.
Yeah.
And I said, look at this. And Simon and I were so angry about this guy. But they took it all back later, and he was very well accepted by most of Germany, that's for sure. 99% of Germany accepted him, and they certainly accepted me and started taking me in. The trainers of Jacobs and others called me in for this kind of horse and that kind of horse. And Simon and I worked on a lot of problem horses. Actually, when I went, the way they trained horses, every horse that you started was a problem horse because they just brought them in out of the fields and you broke them, you know, with a traditional way. And had Simon scooting across the lawn on the end of a rope with wild yearlings, you know, and I'm sure he thought, oh, God, this cowboy is making me do this, but we're going to get killed here. But we were starting horses in 30 minutes that would have taken 4 to 5, 6, 8 days by traditional methods to get on them.
Yeah, one question I had too is, when did you flip from being more the rider to the starter, you two as a team starting all the horses?
Well, I stayed as a rider till 92, race riding over jumps. But I was doing only for Lomitas, I was doing the groundwork. When he raced, I didn't ride. I would do my responsibility was to get him in the stall, so I couldn't risk falling off in a race on the same day or so. So I did Lomitas on race days, and I kept on riding until 92, and then end of 92, I packed in race riding. And then I was on the ground as assistant trainer for Andreas Uhler, where I did all the groundwork then. But I was work riding daily, and then handling horses as needed.
So you're doing both. You were training on the ground in hand.
Yes.
And then jumping on those and working horses in the afternoons or something, right?
Yeah, in the mornings.
Yeah, beautiful. Tell us a little bit about the setup right there at Gästefährhof in Bremen, Germany.
The setup, well, it was founded in 1960, and through my connections with the owners from Fährhof, Lomitas, they turned into a foundation in 1994 and then asked me if I would be their racing manager for the new foundation. Racing manager through my connections, because I've been starting yearlings with Monty, also working as assistant trainer for Andreas Uhler. And that's how my connection got going. It's a big farm those days. They used to have 70 horses in training, plus 60, 70 mares and foals, yearlings, a couple of stallions, Surumu, Acatenango, Lagunas. They were their very famous stallions for the German breds, very successful. Stallions before Lomitas.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful spread, yeah?
I have to say that we were so lucky that he lived through this business of being a jump jockey, because the first time I went to Hamburg when he was in the race, he got on this horse and he's going around with these other horses and they do crazy things. 20 horses in the race or something, you know? And these guys were telling me all the time about what's happening. And in the middle of this race is a lake. Well, that's fine. We have lakes in the middle of our tracks. This is a lake that they're going to go through. I said, what? They're going to go through. And all the horses started going across the lake. Simon was somewhere in the middle of the pack. I don't know. He had a horse that was in the middle of the pack. And he got to the edge of it, and this horse leapt out into the lake, went completely out of sight under the water. And then I'm looking, where's Simon? And they said, oh, this is his horse coming out of the lake. Simon's still in the lake. And I was so happy to get him off of that job and put him in this business of starting very dangerous thoroughbred horses, much less dangerous than being a jump jockey, believe me. Yeah. So we've just had a life that is too wonderful to question. Good friendship, but really good discovery of various things. I mean, Germany actually was a schoolhouse for me with my own concepts. And we did so many horses that I would learn a little tick here and a little tick there and pass it on to Simon. And then I would go back there and he'd be doing it better than I could do it. So I watched him today do a horse that I can't do anymore for sure. But it was like watching the most incredible musician get it right or actor get it right. It was just incredibly wonderful, because this is not an easy horse. And He just made massive improvement in this horse in an hour and a half or something like that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So how many, and we'll get to where we are today right now, but how many trips do you think you made to Bremen, to Gestüt Verhof?
Well, Simon would tell us better than me, but I'm 26 years, I think it was, in total, and it was 2 and 3 times a year. So it was 60, maybe
50 days a year. I think it was 50 days a year at the beginning, split up in 3 visits. And the major visit was in October, November time for the yearlings that we started. And that was always between 25, 30 yearlings. And we were doing that on the main stud farm. And after a couple of years, Gestüt Verhof decided to build a complete new training center because they wanted to expand more in the methods. We were pretty closed in on the stud farm with a riding school and a round pen, but that was it. Mm-hmm. And because they saw this is what they wanted for the future for their horses, they decided to build a complete new training center. Mm-hmm. So they built that in 1998 with a training track, riding school, round pen, 2 blocks of stables and lots of fields for the horses to be turned out with after their work. So that really gave us the possibility to expand Monty's methods in any way we wanted to.
Gosh.
And I got a call from Mr. Jacobs to come over and help with this design, you see. And I went there. And Simon showed me what they planned. He didn't need me at all. He had it all down by then. And his wheels were spinning. I mean, he was rising so fast that I could hardly keep up with him. These stalls are here because of that. This is here because of that. And it was fantastic. And it's still there. And it works beautifully. And we started... How many did we say we started?
Well, I'm sure I haven't counted them yet, but if I went back to it, it's way over 600 yearlings together.
Way over 600 yearlings together. However, in addition to that, the percentage of stakes winners in that is just awesome. And the number of champions of a division of racing is just overwhelming. It's so... grand, it's not believed by most people.
They ever break this? I mean, being so supportive, the Jacobs family, to not only bring you together year after year, but to provide beautifully bred horses. I don't know if anybody could ever break this record, this duo that you guys have created, this team.
You've got Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum putting billions in. And my concepts, through people like Simon, but particularly Simon, is sliding upward to get wider and wider and wider.
Good.
And I see trainers improving on things that I do. The trainer in Dubai, Satish Simar, was a foster son of ours, living right here with us, and learned my thing and took Sheikh Mohammed to another level. Mm-hmm. With his horses. So whatever.
That's good for horses then. I guess it's good for horses that we're starting to be a little more pervasive. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and we never have hidden it so that we could be the ones to have it. Mm-hmm. We've let it go out and we've actually recommended it to a lot of trainers.
Yeah, we call that open source. Yes. I saw you do beautiful work today, both of you, really, with a lovely Mustang. I don't know how old he is now. He must be five or so. Have you ever worked with a Mustang before, Simon?
No, never. Never. the major thing for me was I wanted to come and see Monty and Pat. And they mean so much to me from through the years, so long. And now Monty is not able to travel as much as he used to. During our active time in Germany, I said, then I shall come and see Monty because this friendship means so much to me. And I'm so thankful to Monty for what he's taught me over the years and always trusted me with it and encouraged me. And we've worked together so well all the time to have the chance to actually work here again with Monty nearly heading on for 90 years old.
Yeah.
And I'm now also heading on that way as well.
Well, just behind you. Yeah.
But that was something magic for me today, just to be able to do that. So if it was a Mustang or a donkey or a Shire horse, I wouldn't have minded. It was doing the work. And I'm so happy I can, as Monty's not able to maybe to do as much as he was earlier, I was so happy that I could help him today. Mm-hmm. And we worked on that together. And to see it working out, and if I'm making Monty with that, mm-hmm. happy with that, that's, I'm more than happy.
That's lovely.
I have to say that I was just amazed because he isn't a Mustang, he isn't a pony, he isn't a draft horse, he's a horse.
Mm. Exactly. Yeah.
And those Mustangs are horses. Mm-hmm. They're just running out there in the wild like they were thousands of years ago. And they will still respond to my techniques because I've lived with them. I understand their language. They come to me, they do what I ask them to do. And I watched Simon today taking this Mustang, that's not an easy one. He was wild now. Put a rider on that's a Mustang.
Mannequin.
Mannequin rider. Yeah. And he didn't buck. He didn't bolt. He didn't run. It was just amazing the quiet kind of acceptance that horse had. And he's a horse. Mm-hmm. People shouldn't say, oh, he's a Mustang, you know, and you got to do this and you got to do that. No. Roping their front feet and tripping them down and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's just not.
I loved watching how you use the mannequin rider. I think probably the thing that people don't do as well as you two do is the patience and the repeating and reading your horse.
Incremental.
They'll do it a tenth of what you did today. And some people might say, but you took a long time out there. But when I saw the results at the end, I don't think the horse thought you were out there for a long time because he was so relaxed at the end.
Well, he was given the chance. He's not sure of the whole situation. You can see he's a bit tense, but he's willing to accept there was nothing evil with him. And that's what we were seeing, was giving him a chance. Just repeat it a couple of times that you've done it once or twice. So do it three or four times. And that's the major thing. You just take your time. The horse, you read the horse and he'll tell you when he's ready for the next step. Mm-hmm. And he took every step until we could let him loose with a dummy on his back, and not panicking and accepting. So I think tomorrow morning is going to be a good day, an easy day, because he knows what's coming, and I'm looking forward to it.
Mm, I bet you are. So there's latent learning probably. Overnight, he's going to think about that, and your friends going in the gate, yeah? And it wasn't easy today either, because he did have his mother. Now, they've been separated for years, but they bonded up again in these pens that they've got him in for the gentling. And I hated to see that because it did up your difficulty a little bit because of the distraction. Do you think tomorrow he might be a little bit more focused on you and not worry about her? Or is that going to be a problem?
I don't. It'll obviously take a while before he forgets his mother. Mm-hmm. But after accepting that work today, I think he knows what's coming, and he knows it's not going to hurt him, mm-hmm. and it's not dangerous. So I'm sure he'll be accepting tomorrow pretty quick and easy. I'm very sure about that. And that other thing of being weaned off his mother is just a normal nature, thing of nature that he's experiencing very late in life.
Yeah, very late in life, 5. Yeah, and what's your plan for tomorrow?
Be with Simon again. It's his last day, I think, tomorrow here in California, and then he leaves the next day.
But we'll have Friday morning to work again, so we have two more days to work.
But Simon is so great to, I think he enjoyed that today, and it's wonderful. But you know, it could be dangerous and stuff, and he's so willing to do it. I just hope the owner respects what's going on as much as she, it's a lady, and as much as she should, because she's getting one hell of a opportunity here to have two horses. She adopted two Mustangs.
Okay.
We'll help her.
Yeah. I don't think she knows what a dream team you two are. I don't think the horses do either, but aren't they lucky to have been with you two today? And so much progress was made.
I'm looking forward to tomorrow, because I'd like to get her involved with me tomorrow, handling him, because I think she'll have a lot more confidence then in him, because he's unsure as well. But she has to learn to accept him how he is, and that he's no harm. He just wants to be treated the right way or handled the right way to take the fright out of him. And I want to work with her tomorrow, and that we'll do it together. And Monty will be there too to see how we're doing that. And I think that'll be good quality time.
Yeah, I just have to do the thing in the morning, and then I'm back in the afternoon, and yes. I'm going to watch them. Can't begin to tell you how fantastic it is to have Simon and Celine, his daughter, here with us.
You came as family, too. You brought Celine, your daughter, with you. Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's right. She was here when she was 3 years old, but can't remember anything, obviously. So it's a hell of an experience for her. She loves horses. She works in a horse clinic as a vet nurse. And she grew up in a horse world. What else could she be, you know?
Right.
So she's there, and she's loving every minute of it. Yeah.
That's nice.
And Simon's wife, Cordy, I was there when they first started to date. She was from Berlin area. And she's just been so supportive of Simon and all of his work. And they live right there on the place with the horses all around them. But she's been so supportive of Simon. And it's just a wonderful family, wonderful family.
Well, thank you both for sharing your stories. And I would love to hear. We'll have to do a little follow-up and see how these Mustangs go.
We shall see.
Whisper the language of the herd. Listen, you don't have to say a word.
It's time for Jamie Jennings to fetch an email from Monty Roberts' inbox and share a morsel of Monty's wisdom in a little segment we like to call Ask Monty.
Leave this world a better place in my heart. The magic in the language of the herd.
Dear Monty, watching our horses as a group is an interesting bit of sociology. In particular, I'm struck how the former boss of the herd, an old mare by the name of Kitten, during my teenage years, is no longer the boss. A younger working horse, Deuce, is now clearly the head honcho. How does this transformation take place? Monty's answer. Most of my life has been devoted to a great interest in behavior and the social order of the family groups of flight animals. Obviously, horses have been my main focus. I remember so well how surprised I was to find that the stallion was not the primary decision maker within wild horse families. I like to tell my students that it isn't so much different from people. We men tend to think that we run the show, when in fact a smaller, physically weaker woman really does. And I think it's quite valid that the important decisions made for the human family often rest on the shoulders of the mother. I wrote in my first book about my experiences with wild deer. I explained how my first relationship with a deer was with one I call Grandma. She was a textbook matriarch, spending about 10 months out of the year helping to raise the fawns of other does and keeping social order within the family group. This toothless old doe was still making the important decisions for the safety of this small herd well past the time when she had any offspring of her own. Grandma died of natural causes while still holding the position of matriarchal leader. Where horses are concerned, my experiences have shown me that the lead mare certainly shoulders the bulk of the duties regarding social order. It seems to me that, very much like the deer family, the equine family shows the matriarch a great deal of respect that seems to last well into the autumn of the life of the alpha mare. Unlike the deer, however, I believe that the horse family tends to read the female leader, and when she's no longer physically capable of staying up with the herd and assisting in its health and safety, will allow a younger mare to take over this position. Typically, this is a peaceful exchange of power, and often it is passed from mother to daughter if circumstances allow for that transition. This is one of the areas that I feel needs to be addressed where Mustang capture is concerned, as this is often done in a manner that disrupts the smooth flow of social order. The transition of male leadership is, in my opinion, less important than the exchange of female leadership, but certainly that is an important factor as well. It is commendable that you have made your observations, and I thank you for being interested enough to ask the question. You are in a position to continue your observations and draw conclusions about the individuals in your group. If more horse people choose to understand the social needs of our equine partners, it is likely that we would come to understand them better and develop a more compassionate approach to the relationship we have with them.
For more of these insights into good horsemanship, go to MontyRoberts.com and click on the words Ask Monty at the bottom of the page.
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged. We've got March coming right up here on Easter. We have an Easter Mountain Trail Play Day. Who doesn't want to do that on Easter as opposed to eating chocolate and hunting for boiled eggs? Come on. And then April 1 through 16, we have the introductory course of horsemanship. And that is our two-week course that kicks off the certification. There's no prerequisites, so you'd love it. April 1 through 16. And then we have in May 4, we have another Mountain Trail Play Day. May 11, we have a Horsemanship 101. Those are fun, girlfriends, get together. And May 13 through 17, we have a Monty special training with a translation in Portuguese. So we will have a Miguel Lupiano here, who is from Brazil, and he will be orchestrating that special training with Monty in Portuguese. Of course, Monty doesn't speak Portuguese, so May 13 through 17 is open to English and Portuguese. And then May 24 through 6 through 26, we have a Horse Sense and Healing. June, long-term thinking, we have a Gentling Wild Horse. June 10 through 14, Gentling Wild Horses. June 21 through 23 is, what do we call it, Jen?
It's the movement.
Movement 2024. I can't wait to tell you. I was on the phone with another organization this morning that is going to just knock your socks off too. It'll be so fun to have. Anyway, stay tuned for that. And then July, we have 8 through 12. We have a Monty special training. Those are so fun. We film everything. July 19 through 21, another Horse Sense and Healing. July 20, we have a Mountain Trail Play Day. And July 27, we have a Horsemanship 101. That's mother-daughter, father-daughter, girlfriend weekend. And then August, we have, you can come to the introductory course of horsemanship 5 through 20, August 5 through 20. Or if you can't make those 2 weeks, we actually do break it up into modulars for about 3 days. So think about that too. And then August 25, we have a Horsemanship 101.
I have a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Monty's special training, July 8 through 12.
Yes.
Is that something that you would be useful to come to even if you can't come for all of the days, or is that something that's designed to be all-inclusive all the days?
That is a great question. We have had people say, can I come and audit, you know, Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be in California or whatever. And we do, we just prorate the week.
Oh,
because
cool.
You're, it's such a great question, because every day we take one horse or two that have built from the day before. So we might introduce a new horse, but we might also build incrementally on a horse that we've been working with. So it doesn't really matter, you know. So you could have missed Monday and Tuesday, let's say, and you'll still get a lot out of that third day for that horse. Or we start a whole nother horse. Maybe we got a pullback horse and he's going to be fixed in a day. So it's like a three-ring circus with Monty at the core of it.
So you rotate the horse student through there. So even mm-hmm. if you can come just for the 2 days, yeah. it's still very much a worthwhile investment.
Absolutely. We film all 5 days for sure, because we never know how that horse is going to, the horses are going to respond, or, you know, all these little special things that happen during the week. Monty might actually come up with a new concept. This is where these Monty special trainings, he came up with Centaur Man, which helped a horse who was head shy be not head shy anymore, because dad was sitting in the saddle twiddling around with this horse's ears, not even thinking about it, and suddenly looked down and went, oh my gosh, this horse is not head shy when I'm sitting on top of a horse. He was only hitchhiking on the ground, right? Wasn't that a cool discovery? And that we call Centaur Man, and people use that all the time now to just give the horse a different perspective, because when a person was on the ground, probably something bad happened to his ear or whatever.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
But when they were on a horse, different picture. You remember how like Temple Grandin talks about thinking in pictures?
Yeah.
That's what the picture is. Something different is okay until it's not, and it's all okay. So he comes up with new concepts sometimes during these mind special trainings, which makes them special.
Dun, dun, dun. And you can find all of that and more at MontyRoberts.com. You can also find this podcast at MontyRoberts.com, or you can call Flag Is Up Farms at 805-688-6288. And that phone number will also be found on MontyRoberts.com.
Aside.
You see a theme here? And for details about today's show, MontyRoberts.com or HorsemanshipRadio.com, where you will find all things podcast, including links, photos, and more information about today's guests and topics. Mm-hmm. And we love your feedback. Great place to do that is on social media. On Facebook, if you're old school, it's Monty Roberts, the one with the little blue check mark. And on Twitter, I guess they call it X now.
X, yeah.
Is Monty _ Roberts, as well as Instagram, Monty _ Roberts.
Yeah. Many thanks to our sponsors, too. That's Hands-On Gloves. I've seen them everywhere now, too. It's really cool. I'm really seeing a pervasive movement for people saying, yep, they're the best. And
Jay, well, it's Hands-On Glove season. Hello, springtime.
Yeah, it was a good point. It's probably why I'm seeing it everywhere. That's true. I just love the shake them off. Did you hear that? Like, there's a Taylor Swift song. It's like shake it off or something, you know? And I saw cute ones where people are grabbing all this hair on their hands on gloves and then just one little whip with
it. Oh, I love it. That's great.
And they shake it off. Anyway, so thank you, Jay Michelson, for being our title sponsor. And thank you, MontyRobertsUniversity.com, for being our educational everything. It's really our reason for being. And be sure to visit all the other great shows too on the Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. Until next time, have many happy horse hours.